Please do be seated. It's so tempting to offer comment every time on the improvisation between the reading of the gospel and the sermon. It was softened at the end there with that single note, so I didn't feel quite so much like the evil villain in a movie. Anyway, moving swiftly on. No comment, really. When the time came for their purification according to the law of Moses, they brought him up to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord. 40 days after Christmas, here we are, formally at the end of the Christmas season. Although, it probably won't interest you to know, but I'm going to say it anyway. There's a sort of argument among liturgical purists about whether Epiphany is a separate season or whether it's subsumed within the Christmas season and thereby encompassed thereof. But that's a digression. What were Mary, Joseph, and the infant Jesus doing there at the temple? Or what does the story tell us that they were doing there? They were presenting Mary for ritual purification. And I think there's some misunderstanding about what that means. It doesn't mean she was considered dirty or spoiled. The act of childbirth is a liminal act in law, in the holy law of Israel. That means it's something that happens on the border of life and death, this bringing new life into the world. And thereby, it's a holy place, a place that takes you out of being in the normal space to a liminal space. So you become ritually unclean. It means, unclean means ritually not right, not spoiled. And it's a long discussion that took up many lectures at theological college, so I'm not going to delve any deeper into that, but I think it's worth reminding ourselves that Mary is not considered somehow spoiled by the act of giving birth, nor is any woman considered dirty or spoiled. To return to our story, she was being reintegrated into the community, reintegrated into the worshiping people. And she's seeking to be formally welcomed back into that community of the people of God. And what's happening in this act of the presentation is they are bringing Jesus to be presented, to be redeemed, excused from being called to priestly duties, which was the duty of the firstborn son, for a fee. Again, there's a whole load of Hebrew religious law and tradition tied up in that idea of being redeemed, which we have in our churches westernized and layered with often unhelpful meaning. So I'm not going to go into that one any deeper now, but just to say it was a practical way of excusing the oldest, the firstborn son, of priestly duties. So Jesus is presented to the temple priests, to the public, and we hear to two faithful prophets, two elders who have something to say about this child. Looking back, as I do at my old sermons, not so I can recycle them, but so I'm not saying the same thing every time, I see I've spoken on Simeon and Anna often at great length every year when I've preached on this Sunday, and it does seem I've preached on this particular Sunday repeatedly over the last 23 years or so. But I want us just to hold in our minds this year that essentially what's being said is, yay, faithful elders, celebrate them. I think that's a good message any time. But we can take those words of Simeon and the actions of Anna away with us and reflect on them and meditate on them ourselves. I want to talk about presentation, about this act of presentation. Because the only time I hear presentation these days is with regards to business or finance or great ideas with PowerPoint. And we have a presentation given to us with charts and slideshows and flip charts and fancy graphics, which is all well and good, but doesn't really help us when it comes to getting to grips with what this presentation is in the story we heard today. What is the gospel writer trying to tell us with this tale? Don't doubt for a minute that this story is in here by accident. It's very deliberately placed here by Luke. And it's not just to make account to a diary or a journal entry. It's a story with layer upon layer of meaning within it. The story contains background for Luke's probably non-Jewish readers as to Jesus' roots deep in the Jewish faith. It tells those who hear or read it of his parents' faithful following of the Jewish law. That in itself is an important context. But it also tells us something for those who knew the shorthand of Jewish law of the poverty which the family of Jesus probably lived in, as their choice for a sacrifice was not a lamb, but two turtle doves or a pair of pigeons. That was the option for the poor in the law. The story tells us something of how Luke wants us to see Jesus as Messiah, but as a rather revolutionary Messiah, one who will not make life easy for Israel, the kind of Messiah referred to in the Hebrew prophet Malachi this morning, the one who is refiner's fire and fuller's soap, one who will not make it all right, but be destined to transform and challenge all who met him. All of this and more is found in those 18 verses in the second chapter of Luke's Gospel. It is not meant to just be a story about Jesus presented formally in a ritual, but about Jesus being presented to us, the hearer, the reader. It's about revealing something of the Christ. And for me, where I am at this moment, and it might be different in 6 or 9 or 12 months or 2, 3 years from now, but at this moment, it's about not just the amazing words of Simeon or the faithfulness of Anna or the religious aspects of the tale that are resting on my mind and in my heart. It's about how God is choosing to reveal God's self at this point in the story and in this point in our story as community. God is revealed here not in wonder or glory or splendor, but through a vulnerable child of a poor family. This is the God who confronts us here, a God presented in humility, in faithfulness, and in poverty. Which leads me to thinking, how do we present God in our life in community? Or even, do we present God beyond our community? Do we share a God who is faithful and humble? What kind of God are we showing to the world around and to one another as we seek to live together faithfully? For we are presenting God, one way or another. If we as the people of God are seen to be disinterested or disconnected from the world around, or in our gatherings, if we're anything but loving and compassionate, if we're anything but gracious in our dealings with one another, then we are showing what we believe God to be like as we live out our values with one another. Because we live out consciously or unconsciously the values that we hold. As Christian community, we are consciously or unconsciously expressing our heart in the way that we speak, in the way that we act, and even in the way that we show how we feel and think. I have seen and experienced compassionate care in this community. I have seen love in action. I have learned about my own faith and been challenged and inspired by those around me, by each of you, by my colleagues and my friends here. I see living faith and faith lived out amongst you, these people. But we have further to go, and the need to continually look at who we are and how we are is crucial. Which brings me back to the excitement of vestry. I had to get at least one laugh in the sermon. In 3 weeks' time, we gather as community to consider our governance, our structures, our finance, and the things that make our community tick. It might not seem the most enlivening sermon topic, but my own preparations for vestry this year over the last few weeks have caused me to feel energized and excited. I'm drawing together the work that has been done in the past months, indeed in the past years, in creating a strategic plan. Hooray, I hear you all call. Actually, I suspect, thank you, John. John's saying hooray because we're trying to strong arm him into a position in the church, and he said, I can only do it if you have a strategic plan. Fair comment. But I suspect there'll be more than a few voices among us saying, haven't we done all this before? Well, we have, kind of. But it's kind of. We have exceptional, and it really was very good work in Quo Vadis, in the report of the life of our community that was out 4 years ago. We have the surveys that have been done by the strategic group a few months back, and we've had why days, and we've had conversations, but we've never had a plan. And I confess my shortcoming, I don't think I have ever articulated what I feel the vision for this community is. And it's time for me to do that. Vestry asked last year, actually that might be not strong enough, Vestry directed last year the rector and wardens and PC to come forward with a strategic plan to bring it to Vestry this year, which will be the 24th of February. And this has excited me, surprisingly enough. We have so much good happening in and around this community. We have good, loving, committed members of this congregation and the wider community, those who orbit around St. John's. The many groups that are connected to the life of this church. We have for many years presented as an active, living, and caring church community. But I think we perhaps are feeling the lack of a sense of mission, vision, and direction. And without vision, says the proverb, the people have no restraint or direction, or even the people perish in some translations of Proverbs 29, verse 18. And for me, in my reflecting, in my praying, in my thinking, and in my hoping and my dreaming for this community, I am called again to consider our presentation. What story of the work of the divine are we sharing? What do we want to share? Who do we want to be in this place and in this time and moving forward together? At our best, we reflect the Christ child and the Holy Family in today's story at the temple, vulnerable, humble, and faithful, open to the divine, and sharing a God who meets us where we are, as we are, and who loves us completely for who and what we are. And I hope that in articulating that vision, living those values, we will continue to be a community that meets the needs we encounter within and beyond these walls, and to live in the life of Christ, learning, growing, and loving more and more. As the ancient prayer for choristers says, grant that what we confess with our lips we may believe in our hearts, and what we believe in our hearts we may show forth in our lives. All this for the sake of Jesus Christ. Amen.